Come to the Full Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 9:15 British Summer Time. Today is August 31st. Today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. First, let's have a review of what's been happening this week. And it's been a relatively soft week until today on most stock markets. There was a short-term overbought condition that that's been evident now for a couple of weeks, and we've been in a process of consolidation of what have been really quite powerful gains in the earlier part of August. The majority of markets were fairly weak, but not in a dynamic fashion for the first 4 days of the week, and we saw a number of upward dynamics today, particularly in some of the weaker European markets. And that was on the back of Ben Bernanke's comments at Jackson Hole that the Fed has a whole arsenal of unconventional tools at its disposal, that it's not afraid to use them, and that while he didn't say when they were going to be used, he said that they were more than willing to stand by and are ready to use them should the need arise. So that was viewed rather positively by stock markets. Likewise, in the commodity markets, the precious metal markets in particular, very similar story with stock markets. They had developed short-term overbought conditions. They had pulled back in the last few days. They were testing their first areas of potential support. And today, just about all of them posted impressive upward dynamics from that first area of potential support, which in the case of gold, silver, and platinum represented the upper side of the underlying trading ranges. Gold today was stronger by $35, silver by $1.28, platinum by $36, palladium by $13. This is rather important action, particularly when one looks at them on a weekly basis, because we're seeing now that gold has pushed back above its 200-day moving average. It did that last week, despite being rather soft for the first couple of days of the week. When one looks at the weekly chart, one wouldn't know that there was any softness at all. It's completely unwound, the softness that we saw earlier this week, and looks to be pushing and extending its advance back above the 200-day EMA, and that is really quite positive action. In the Treasury markets, U.S. Treasuries were stronger today by a full point. They've rebounded remarkably impressively from, again, that was another asset class that had come back to the first area of potential support, which was represented in the case of Treasuries by the region of the 200-day moving average, which happened to coincide with the upper boundary of the underlying trading range. And it has bounced remarkably emphatically to such an extent that it is now pushing back up towards its highs. It's currently at 151.21, and the peak is a bit more than 153. Now, such has been the speed of the advance, it wouldn't be beyond the bounds of possibility that we see some consolidation of recent gains in much the same way that we saw in those precious metals until this week. What would really characterize resistance in the region of this 153 area would be a large downward dynamic, and with some additional follow-through, that would probably help to turn the tide. One of the reasons, of course, that U.S. Treasuries were firm in here today is because any whiff of an additional bout of quantitative easing would represent additional demand for the asset class. It is interesting, and I really would recommend reading Ben Bernanke's speech in here today. There are a number of points that he makes, particularly about Treasuries. He basically says that they have been successful in lowering long-term yields by manipulating that market. They are cognizant of the possibility that they could become the dominant buyer in a number of the respective issues, and they are alert to the risks that come with that. But when the quantitative easing process has been roundly castigated by investors and politicians, it is interesting that central banks view it as a success story, because from their perspective, they have been able to manipulate the market rates lower, and from their lexicon, that is a success because it allows the allows money to move through the system in a better fashion. It is also interesting that from the Fed's perspective, there has been no noticeable uptick in volatility. Now, that I found really rather intriguing, because it's as obvious as the nose in our faces that there has been an uptick in volatility. They are perhaps looking at this over a longer time frame than intraday investors or short-term traders. They are perhaps looking at it through a different definition of the term volatility, but in terms of the markets, we have definitely had an increase in intraday volatility. The VIX index has come back down to an historically low level over the last number of weeks, but has now begun to push back up again. So the market volatility, in just about any definition of the word, has certainly increased. And there are two primary reasons for that. One, of course, are the high-frequency traders, where they're stuffing the markets full of orders and have the capacity to withdraw liquidity when things don't go their way. And of course, the other major factor in additional liquidity is the incredible amount of money creation that has gone on following the 2008 crash. And it is interesting that when we compare the S&P 500 and what it has done over the last 10 years, the market has basically been range-bound. It peaked in 1999, and if one had invested in early 2000 and still had their investment today, allowing for without the benefit of dividends, then the nominal value would be pretty similar. But the uptrend from the 2002-2003 lows to the 2007 high, compared to the uptrend that we've seen from the 2009 low until now, represent two very different market environments. The market environment following the 2003 low was characterized by a relatively consistent uptrend. The Fed also lowered rates to an historically low level, and that was seized as an opportunity by the banking sector to increase leverage, and that initiated the housing bubble and speculation in housing markets and the lowering of lending standards. What we've seen in the last cycle, where the credit crisis represented an incredible dislocation in the banking sector, and we've seen that not only the Fed, but central banks globally have introduced massive monetary accommodation to enable the banking sector to function. But as global investors, we're probably more sensitive to the ability of capital to be created in one area to have an effect in somewhere else than central bankers, who tend to be micro-focused on the individual data from their own respective jurisdictions. And beyond the shadow of a doubt, what we've seen is that the massive monetary accommodation that we've seen just right across all markets has pushed up the value of are the nominal prices of risk assets. And investors have become like junkies in terms of that they've become hooked on monetary accommodation. So when it looks like there's going to be additional monetary accommodation, we see these impressive rallies that are notable for their persistence. And we've seen those all the way through from 2008 until now. And there is a pretty sound argument that the three-month uptrend that we've enjoyed since May, and which is not yet over, could persist for a while longer, provided the flow of liquidity from central banks continues. And that's why Ben Bernanke's speech today is noteworthy, because the Fed are saying that if they see any threat to the USA's growth, then they will move back into the market and start buying bonds and increasing the supply of money. Not all of that money is going to end up in the treasury markets, and it is going to flow out into more productive assets. And if the performance of risk assets today is anything to go by, then precious metals are first in line in terms of the asset class that investors are willing to support. Not least because when one looks at the performance of various asset classes, then precious metals have been beaten down, and they are still comparatively cheap compared to stock markets. For example, the S&P and the NASDAQ are brushing their highs for the year, whereas gold is still well below its high for the year and has significant upside potential even within the range that has been evident over the last year. So from someone who is coming back into the market and has a risk appetite, then the precious metals sector certainly looks alluring at today's levels. The performance of European stock markets is also noteworthy, because markets like the FTSE and the DAX have been in these ranging three-month uptrends, which one would have to say have their primary characteristic has been the progression of higher reaction lows, but they have been volatile. But then one looks at Spain, which was stronger today by over 3%, and the IBEX has been consolidating here above 7,000, which also represents the upper side of the underlying base and is firming from that region and does look like it can go higher from here. We've talked a little bit about the Fed potentially moving back in to increase its monetary accommodation, but Mario Draghi at the ECB is about to engage in additional bond buying. There was some speculation in the press, I think it was in Bild yesterday or this morning, that the head of the Bundesbank had considered resigning as a result of this plan to go on and purchase more bonds, and has been persuaded to remain in his post because he has a better chance of actually enacting change. But the fact that you have so many of these very senior German monetary officials either retiring, quitting, or threatening to quit suggests that while there is this stiff German opposition to unconventional monetary tools, that the ECB is acting in the interests of the entire monetary union and will pursue whatever is necessary to ensure its own survival. Because without the euro, there wouldn't be an ECB. And if we just look at it in very bold terms, bureaucrats can be relied on one thing above all else, and that is to preserve their own positions. When we look at China, there has been a great deal of anxiety expressed about the prospects for the Chinese economy. It is worth mentioning that the slowdown in China has been engineered by the People's Bank of China. they have set out to clamp down and stamp out speculation in the property sector, and they have to a large extent succeeded. But what they have not yet done is tackle the root causes of that speculation. And the fact remains that China, the whole system is set up for speculation because there is no real ability to, there's no corporate bond market to speak of. There is very little in the way of the ability of normal investors to invest outside the country, and that concentrates assets within the country. So it is either the stock market, the precious metal markets, or property markets. And property markets have been seen as the most reliable. There has certainly been increased interest in the precious metal markets, and the stock market is being punished at present by the monetary tightening that has been going on. Now, there have been tentative signs that the attitude among the monetary authorities towards the stock market has softened, and the lowering of the transaction tax has certainly been positive in that regard. But until we start to see aggressive cutting of interest rates and outright support for the stock market, then it's going to remain under pressure. When we look at it in terms of what are the possibilities that China is going to engage in a fresh round of stimulus, then the possibility of stimulus is quite high. The possibility that that stimulus is going to be pumped straight back into infrastructure development, I think, is quite low. China crossed a Rubicon in terms of its development in the last few years, where it now gains more per capita benefit in terms of GDP from investing in its people than investing in infrastructure. The evolution of the consumer class and the services industry is on a secular growth trajectory. The stock market is still heavily weighted by the industrials, the materials, and the banking sector. They don't particularly represent where the real growth story is going to be in China in the next number of decades. So the economy is going through this process of evolution in terms of migrating from the infrastructure focus to a services focus and moving up the value chain in terms of its manufacturing. That isn't something that's going to happen overnight. It isn't going to be easy. But everything that has happened so far points towards a continuing move in that direction. If the monetary policy officials in China have engineered this slowdown, then they have the tools to reverse it. And they will do so if they feel that they have achieved their objectives and there is a risk to growth. So there is the possibility going forward that we could have monetary accommodation in China, in Europe, and in the USA. And that is helping to stoke the interest in the stock market. Against this background, what we've seen in the government bond markets is a momentum move. The Fed chairman alluded to it in his speech today when he said that they had artificially reduced yields on the long end of the curve. What that suggests is that whereas a number of people have been thinking of the inevitability of an inflationary outcome from the fact that there has been this huge increase in money supply, and that is a non-trivial risk because central banks have not yet demonstrated that they are capable of removing this monetary accommodation without creating an inflationary outcome when the velocity of money eventually does start to pick up. However, when one looks at the performance of government bonds, and It has all the characteristics of the final stage of a major bull market, where supply has increased substantially and investors are literally falling over themselves to participate. When that eventually ends, then anyone who's been buying in the last year is going to end up with some pretty heavy losses. But what is the catalyst that could actually start to change the performance of this market? And it could feasibly be growth. Because if the US economy does begin to grow once more, housing appears to have bottomed. The labor market remains weak. And although that is a lagging indicator, it has been lagging for too long. So it is turning into a concern for monetary policy officials. But Wall Street has been in a process of valuation contraction and rising dividend yields for 12 years. The last time it did this was between 1965 and 1980, which was about 15 years. So we're almost certainly closer to the end than to the beginning of this process of valuation contraction. Factory automation is creating the kind of productivity gains so that labor costs in future will be less of a concern when corporations are thinking about where to site their factories. And if you take out labor as the main concern, then the next two concerns are energy, probably followed by transportation, and if we were to put it in a third one, it'd be raw material costs. The USA currently has a distinct advantage in terms of the cost of energy. It's being driven by the unconventional oil and gas boom. That boom is likely to go global at some point in the next decade, but the USA in particular has a significant lead in that regard. And energy is likely to be cheaper in the US than elsewhere for the foreseeable future, not least in natural gas pricing because of shale gas and other unconventional gas supplies. So that turns into an advantage for North America, since North America also represents by far the largest economic area, then it makes sense that if unit labor costs can be brought down through increased automation and cheaper energy can be availed of, then is there a great need to both endure the time lag it takes to transport goods from Asia primarily to North America rather than actually producing domestically? I view this as a reasonably plausible scenario that could transform the outlook for the US economy over the next decade to two decades. We don't see a great deal of evidence for this type of evolution at present, but it's not difficult to add one and one together in this type of regard. That could help to spur economic growth over the medium to long term. And if we do start to see growth starting to pick up, then the need for economic accommodation or monetary accommodation to spur the economy by the Fed will be reduced significantly. That's when they're going to be presented with the problem of how they're going to remove that monetary accommodation. But one of the first things they're going to stop doing is buying bonds. And that means that rates will rise. That could easily turn into a self-feeding motion as some of the more leveraged people are forced out of this market and we could see yields rising substantially. So perhaps the greatest risk to the major bull market that has been evident in treasuries for the last 30 years is a bullish environment for the equity markets. And the equity markets that are likely to benefit most in an environment where yields start to rise are those that have the ability to keep pace with inflationary pressures. And that is generally those that have reliable yields. And it is no mistake that the companies that have been most rewarded by investors over the last year are those that are leveraged to the growth of the global economy and those that offer or that have a strong record of increasing their dividends. In the current environment, we're presented with three parts of market phases because US treasuries look like they're at the end of a major bull market. And the precious metals represent perhaps the market that is most likely to form a bubble within the next decade. And gold does look like it is going to push on from here and hit new highs at either by the end of this year or into the beginning of next year and extend its bull market even further. And we've been presented with a largely ranging environment for most Western stock markets for much of the last 12 years, and this represents the area that is probably likely to represent the next big bull market when we eventually start to see this valuation contraction ending. We are already seeing that valuation contraction ending for a significant number of autonomies that are leveraged to the growth of the global consumer. We cannot yet say that about the wider market or about Wall Street generally, but what we are starting to see are straws in the wind that the outlook for the global economy is still very positive. And there is the distinct possibility that at some point in the next decade, we are going to see the global economy again firing on all cylinders. And that will represent a very bullish environment indeed. So that is the long-term picture. In the short term, we remain hooked on monetary accommodation. It looks like we're going to get some more of it, and that would suggest that we're going to see some additional upside for stock markets. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening and wish all the best to all of you.